Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts the Restoration offers for today's world. We aim to feature a variety of guests with roots in the Restoration tradition from Community of Christ and our friends from The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The music has been provided by Ben Howington. You can find his music at mormonguitar.com. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Project Zion Podcast. This is your host, Josh Mangelson, and with me tonight is Brittany Mangelson. You want to say hi?
Hello!
So tonight, we're finally getting back to you after we both individually had an episode that we recorded with the Faith Transitions podcast, where Brittany told her story and I told my story. Like I said, with my Faith Transition episode, I felt like, and speaking to Brittany, she also feels the same way, that we more heavily talked about coming out of Mormonism than our experiences of coming into Community of Christ. And so we wanted to sit down and record an episode talking about our experiences with Community of Christ, what led us to it, what we love about it, the things that have made us uncomfortable, so you may know how to better help at least seekers that are coming from an LDS perspective with that as their background coming into Community of Christ, and how you can be a better help for them. And hope you enjoy this episode. So to pick up, where did we leave off is where I'm wondering, and then we can go from there.
Well, I told my story up until the current day, but I feel like I just kind of breezed through. I talked a lot about deconstructing Mormonism, and I felt like I breezed through my reconstruction within 20 minutes. So.
Okay. So the one thing I didn't mention is an experience that I had. So when I recorded my episode, I talked about an experience that I had while praying that led me to end up serving an LDS mission. And that was when I prayed, I had felt God's grace, and it took me many years later after that to realize that that was an event that was separate from my religious upbringing, that I had conflated the two, my life experience and then my actual relationship with God. And so I served in an LDS mission and all my experiences with the LDS church. And I just wanted to talk about an experience that I had. So when I was struggling with LDS church, I was listening to a lot of podcasts, and one of them that was put out by Dan Witherspoon on the Mormon Matters podcast had on a guy that in the Mormon faith has really picked up the practice, the spiritual practice of meditation. His name is Phil McLemore, and I just remember them talking about how to meditate. And it's not a practice that I'm very good at, and it's not something that I'm consistent with to this day. But I decided to try that out one night when I was at work, because at the time I was working 12-hour shifts, and in the middle of my shift I had a lot of downtime. And so in the middle of my shift, I decided to just sit down and try meditation. And it was just kind of like this type of meditation where it's like surrender meditation. So you try to wipe out any thought that comes in your mind. And then I was just trying to connect with God and trying to image, like, if I were in an elevator and I was just counting the floors as they went by in my mind, and how long it would take me to reach a floor with God, so to speak. And so I don't know how many floors I went through, over 100. And when the doors opened, I sensed, and this is all just in my mind, but I sensed what I consider like two or three entities. I couldn't even make out what was going on in my mind, but I felt the unmerited, unconditional love of God for me. It's not something that I had felt so strongly since the prayer that led me to an LDS mission. And I was just really struggling with my own personal worth, because within an LDS framing, like, you have to do all these things on a checklist to merit that type of response from God. And I just remember, like, why am I getting this response from God? It felt like family from another dimension reaching out and just giving me this warm embrace. And I remember, like, I wasn't paying tithing to the LDS church. I wasn't doing all these things that were a checklist at the time. And I was just trying to wrestle with, like, what it was that I experienced. And that was soon after that I got in contact with John Hammer and started asking about Community of Christ, because I knew the LDS church wasn't working out for me so well. So out of curiosity, just wanted to look into a few other things. And by that time, like I had mentioned in the other episode, I had already been deconstructing and reconstructing what personal worth meant like, and everybody already had inherent worth to God. So like before I even knew about the enduring principles of all are called and everybody having inherent worth, those were things that were already values for me, leading into when I talked to John Hammer and started asking him about attending the Salt Lake congregation. So how about you, Brittany?
So I don't think I had any grandiose one kind of experience. For me, I felt like I was trying to fit my square body into a circle hole, and it wasn't working. But I kind of became okay with it not working, and I really lowered my expectations of what church should be and what God should be. And I guess just for a little context, I mean, when Josh was going through all of this, when he first found Community of Christ, I was pretty broken, but I was also determined to stay in the LDS church. It was my family, it was my community, it was my heritage, it was my neighborhood, it was my social structure, it was my language, it was everything. And I figured if there was, as long as there was a progressive community within Mormonism, that we would be able to make it work. And it would be hard, but we could do it. And so I wasn't overly happy when he started going to Community of Christ, because I felt like we had finally gotten on the same page or close to the same page. And then suddenly he wanted to step outside of this little, I mean, I thought it was a little oasis within Mormonism, but looking back, it was not an oasis. But I felt a deep sense of betrayal, and suddenly all of my insecurities and kind of that, oh, this actually could have an eternal effect on us. Those feelings and insecurities just came flooding in. And so I buckled down a little bit, and he would tell me things about, you know, that he was learning or discovering about Community of Christ. And even if it was about the history or theology or whatever, and I would fire back, and I suddenly became very Mormon again, and wasn't really willing to, I guess, have those hard conversations, because I knew those conversations would lead to action, and I was too afraid of taking those actions.
I don't know. Looking back, it was a hard time for sure. We've been watching this TV series called The Path, and just like the hard conversations that he has with his wife just brings up a lot of pain from just remembering my own transition and the hard conversations that we had had. I didn't want to put Brittany through that, but I also knew that I wasn't happy where I was at and wasn't so sure that it was going to get better within the current situation we were in.
But luckily, by June, Josh had talked me into going to reunion up in Huntsville, Utah, and we had just had a baby a few months before, and so I was worried about it on a practical level, about sleeping with, you know, basically a newborn and little twins in some cabin in a new place. And I was worried about that, but I was also really worried because it was a new church. And I had literally never been to another church outside of the LDS church. And I feel like it's a bold move to actually physically step outside and join a new community in their worship. So I was worried, but within really immediately, I could instantly tell the difference. I was really awkward with a brand new baby, and I had been a children's teacher in our LDS ward. It was made known to me, politely, but made known to me, that I could, you know, nurse my baby outside of the classroom or outside of the room where everybody was together. And so it was almost this gentle way of kicking me out. And I felt awkward because, you know, I had my two girls in there. And so within the first few minutes of being up at the camp, you know, I was told where everything was, that I was free to nurse wherever, because I think I'd made some mention of, you know, well, you get settled in, Josh, and I'll go nurse the baby in the car. And it was like, oh no, you feel free to do that wherever. And it just, the contrast was immediate with how we were treated. In our ward, I almost felt like we were seen as a problem. I mean, we were seen as a problem. And that obviously wasn't the case with Community Christ. And so we were only there for a couple of days. And Locke Mackay was the guest minister. And so that was fascinating to hear the history of the church from a different perspective. And that was huge for me. And really, I guess, putting the whole story into context and hearing a different perspective. Some of the stories I was hearing were stories that I heard growing up, but they were just told from a more rational, historical point of view, and not necessarily this puffed up story to try to win your emotions. And I was really impressed by that. And also just the sense of community and how church leaders were talked about. Obviously, there's respect and camaraderie, but I mean, I could tell that even leaders at World Church, they weren't seen in the same way that you need to revere and obey and follow like I was used to. And that really, really struck me.
Right. So you could go up and brush shoulders with them and they'd be there at camp washing the dishes with you and having casual conversation. And there was no feeling whatsoever that there was this hierarchy or ranking and they were above you and you're below.
Well, and that's, I mean, because Robin Linkhart was there and she was the president of 70 at the time. And I don't think I realized that at first. Maybe I did. Yeah, I may have. But I was so impressed that she wasn't the one that was preaching and talking to me. I was the one that was being heard. And it wasn't the other way around, and that really took me by surprise. But again, just made me feel instantly like part of the community. And so Josh has mentioned that he kind of has a crazy work schedule, and he's able to come to church about half the time. And so the day after reunion, he was going back to work, the Sunday after reunion ended. And so I thought, well, maybe I'll go check out this church and, you know, actually go to a full worship service. And I kind of thought I was crazy, especially because my girls were supposed to give talks in primary that day. And I felt really bad, like we were bailing. But I knew that if I didn't go when I kind of was jazzed up about it a little bit, I knew if I didn't go then my enthusiasm would probably quickly die or my curiosity would die and I would never get up the courage to go back. So we went. And I took the three kids by myself, and it was amazing. We were a pretty small congregation at the time, a handful of seekers, but, you know, a strong congregation. And I remember Josh coming home and talking about it, and I basically just said, we need to pursue this until it stops working for us, because that weekend was a million times better than anything that I've experienced in the past 10 years. And by that point, I had kind of come to the conclusion that either we were going to stay Mormon or we would just be non-religious. And I think that either of those options are viable choices, depending on your circumstances and your beliefs, and that's great. But suddenly I had a third option, and I was really excited to pursue this third option. And so we basically told our LDS church leaders that we were taking a break, that we needed to be released from our assignments, and that we were going to pursue this. And so I think Josh worked the next 3 or 4 weeks.
Right. And I was really surprised that you, Brittany, wanted to just like jump in and start going. You latched onto it a lot quicker than me, because before reunion, I'd only gone to a couple seekers meetings. I hadn't actually been to the worship service. I don't know why that scared me more, but seekers meetings seemed a little bit more disarming. So that's all I had gone to. And then you decided to take all three kids by yourself, and you've never looked back since then. And with my work schedule, you've to this day probably been twice as many times as I have just because of my crazy schedule.
I like our church. What can I say?
Anyway, yeah, so I don't remember the exact schedule, but you had taken the kids a few times by yourself before I had even had a chance to go to an actual Sunday service at its regular hours.
Yeah, so I think the things that struck me most were just authenticity of the group. Shortly after we started attending, we kind of got this influx of seekers, and the vast majority of them are still in the congregation today. And just the conversations that we could have and the questions that we could ask and the answers that we were given were just amazing. I have never felt so validated in my doubt, even if I wasn't the one verbalizing the questions or the doubts. Things that were being talked about were still, you know, my thoughts too. And just seeing that you could have doubts and you could say really scary things out loud and that you were still welcome was amazing. And we have, you know, in Salt Lake, I wouldn't say that all of our theology is completely, how do I say that?
That everybody believes the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah,
we don't.
We have diverse opinions, and it's great. I mean, I love worshiping beside people that believe things that are different than I do, or that, you know, struggle with different things, or don't struggle with things that I struggle with. And I think that it makes a strong community. And I think that was probably what drove me to Community of Christ most, is because I figured, okay, so if I'm still figuring out where my faith is, where my theology is, this is a safe place to do that. I don't have to have all the answers right now. And so, I mean, even when we were baptized, my theology has changed since then as well. And so it wasn't like I had all my stuff together and I knew exactly where I stood with God and scripture and, you know, whatever topic you want to bring up, that it could be this evolving, continual journey.
Right. Yeah. Just continually on a journey. When I was baptized, I remember, and I guess this is not typical because when you're being ordained or confirmed or what have you, you're given a charge, but not necessarily need to respond to that charge. And so, like, we got into this, I guess slightly unorthodox thing where we also respond to our charge. We'd get up and talk a little bit at our own thing. And so, yeah, when I got up and talked, I said, I think I mentioned I'll always be Mormon.
Really?
And I laugh about that now. It's like, yeah, I've moved on pretty far from just even that now. So in a way, I mean, I think what I was trying to express is I'll always be a child of the restoration movement or something, but it came out that I'd always be Mormon, yeah.
That's really funny.
yeah, for sure.
I don't think I would have said that.
But no, yeah, it was interesting, like, asking questions and just, like, waiting, scared to ask the questions and waiting for what response would you get from these people that are lifelong Community of Christ members. And it's kind of funny looking back now, because, like, asking Robin or Penny Young in the congregation questions, I think I had them more perplexed a lot of the questions than anything. They had no idea where I was even coming from or why it was even an issue at all.
Yeah, well, I think one thing that's been interesting watching, you know, maybe some online conversations between seekers and lifelong Community of Christ members is the value, I guess, that we place on history is usually different, because in the LDS church, history is what proves the one true church idea and identity. And that's how you prove scripture and how you prove authority. And so history is just taught really differently. And so I think a lot of seekers usually have a lot of historically based questions,
right,
that just aren't really an issue in Community of Christ.
Also, like, the things that you think, the things that you believe, or do or haven't done.
What does your church say about X, right. Y, and Z?
Right, so you don't have to say certain things, and your worthiness isn't wrapped up into it. You don't have to have a correct belief or a correct testimony to have your worthiness called into question. That was, like, clear from the get-go, is that what was extended out to me is I was inherently a worthy person to them. And I don't even think they knew much about me, but yeah, that was definitely the vibe that I got from them, is it didn't matter. Like what, right, like what Brittany said, we were a project. And I knew that if I had stayed in the LDS church, I'd always be seen as some broken vessel and as a project, probably for the rest of my life, because I knew things that didn't square, and I didn't know how to resolve those things that didn't square in my mind and still speak the verbiage in a way that would make other people happy.
Yeah.
So yeah, like coming to Community of Christ, I didn't have to have like a correct way of saying things, or I definitely have picked up on things as they're said, but I didn't have to say those things in a correct way for me to not have my opinions valued and esteemed for what they were. So yeah, so you went for about a month by yourself, and you've never looked back. I think the Bryants, they came in from California in around August or so, and he's now the pastor, Seth, of the congregation as of January of this year. So last year, he was an assistant pastor with Robin Linkart while she was still here. And so in that time frame, let's see, what have we done in the congregation in that time? I mean, we were asked to do pretty much everything with worship, as far as other than priesthood things. Mm-hmm. We've been asked to do and participate pretty much with everything. Yeah, so Brittany helped out with a lot of potlucks, and she also spearheaded a few things that we did with outreach into the community, putting together manna bags to take to the homeless people.
It started out as a project for school to wrap up my bachelor's degree. And I had just kind of put out feelers of, I need to get connected with an organization and do some sort of project. And before you knew it, it was this whole big thing. And they gave me their credit card number and said, hey, you have X amount of money, you know, X amount of dollars to go purchase all these supplies for the homeless. And it was amazing to me because that was the first time that I actually saw, I guess, ministry in action that you could create and just do. I think I told Josh several times, like, there's no way that you could just go to a ward and say, hey, let's go feed the homeless and
let's spend $300 on it.
Yeah.
Money like pulled out somewhere, you know?
Yeah. That's not a thing. It doesn't exist at all. Especially if someone who's only been attending for a few months is the one that gets it going. That was actually really a really big moment for me in thinking, like, okay, this is, again, I felt like I was, I told Josh that we were going to go until it stopped working. And so I kind of feel like I went on this, I don't know, quest to find the skeletons in the closet, or the quest to find, you know, a reason why it wouldn't work. Because as much as I loved that it was working, we were doing this all in secret. So our families really had no idea. I mean,
right. Maybe a little bit. Saw some of those posts of mine on Seekers. It's like, what are your skeletons? What are the bad parts of Community of Christ history? You know, I don't want to have a wool over my eyes, so to speak, again.
Yeah. It's like you don't want to feel duped again.
Right.
You want to know what you're really getting into.
And so there are some issues in history that was just spoken about, but nothing that was like an issue today, I think, for a good reason. Like, they had the fruits. Community of Christ has the fruits to show that they've actually worked through certain things and have the merits of repentance for certain things.
Yeah.
Right. So, yeah. So, like, one of the things that had come up is that they dealt with their own form of racism in their mid-20th century. And, well, of course, anything that you'd go through in the 1800s, you know, but I would say that the merits of our racism, if we still do have racism, at least we're working to get over it and see unity and diversity. And I think the clearest way to see that we are working through it better is look at the top leadership.
Yeah.
Look at the diversity. I know it's not quite there as much as they'd like to see it as far as diversity goes, but yeah, to have the people that they do from all the way to the top. And by top, I guess I'm throwing in old verbiage of hierarchy again, but I guess, well, I just representative, if you're going to have governing bodies of the church, you know, world church, they want to be a reflection of their own values and put that forth to everybody else, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, we went through that phase of like, what are your skeletons? And
so one question that I know that people have asked me a lot is, why did you choose baptism and confirmation and not just confirmation? And for me, I wanted the whole thing. I wanted the whole experience. And I was baptized when I was 8, when I was LDS. And I felt like even up until that point, my view of God had changed radically. And I wanted a way to claim that again. And I don't discount or discredit my former faith journey or my former baptism. And that was special. I was baptized by my dad. And so, I mean, it was still meaningful. So it's not that it replaced it, but it was just kind of that next step. And I felt like I wouldn't regret being baptized, but I was afraid I would have regretted not being baptized. And once you decide to just be confirmed, you can't go back and be rebaptized. And so, I mean, yeah, I think that both are valid choices, but I have been asked that several times. Since I could have just joined through confirmation, why did I choose baptism as well? And also for me, it's kind of interesting to watch how our congregation has evolved, because when we first started attending, I guess before our baptisms, I think we saw 2 baptisms, and both of them were done in full white. And I knew that we didn't have to be baptized in white, but a big part of my faith journey was about reclaiming things. And reclaiming symbols and renaming them and just trying to find like self-empowerment in that way. And I really struggled with the LDS endowment, and there's a lot of white there, and it's very symbolic. And I mean, it's just your basic symbol of white equaling purity. I felt like I needed to reclaim that. And so when I was baptized wearing white, it wasn't necessarily a purity thing. Well, it wasn't at all. Because, I mean, my theology behind baptism had changed too, but it was more about me making a very strong visual statement of a color that had meant something for so long, or, you know, meant multiple things for so long that the symbolism had kind of been decided for me. And so for me, it was kind of a way to reclaim that. And honestly, I think that Josh just kind of went along with it because that's what I was doing.
It's probably the honest truth. So what led us up to baptism was I had gone to a few seekers meetings starting out in April. So just timeline wise, we went to reunion in June, and then come January that next year of 2015, January 4th is when we were baptized. And I remember having discussions with Brittany because I hadn't really talked to my parents too much about it. It was, like Brittany said, a lot of stuff that we were doing was kind of in the dark to our extended families. But I remember Brittany talking about if we know it's the right thing to do. Her sister was going to come home from her mission. And I think that was April of 2015 that she came home.
Early May.
Yeah. And she just didn't want to wait until her sister had come home. So it was like, we had just determined, are our parents going to be ever okay with this decision? If we wait 6 months, are they going to be more okay with us being baptized? If we wait a year, will they be more okay with this decision? And yeah, we had determined that probably wasn't going to be the case. And to this day, it still isn't the case for us. So if we were going to be baptized and confirmed based on our parents' approval or our siblings' approval, we still wouldn't be members of the community of Christ to this day.
Yeah.
So yeah, we just decided January, and I think that also revolved around Robin's schedule. Is that true?
Yeah. She's going to be back in Colorado for a while. And so we knew that she needed to be part of that. And so we basically, well, yeah. And then your work schedule too. So it just worked out that the first week of January was the best time to do it. And I will say that I thought that it was a little hypocritical of both Mormons and maybe ex-Mormons too, who thought that we did things a little bit fast, and maybe not so much hypocritical of former or struggling Mormons, but especially of active Mormons, because my little sister was on a mission and we would get, you know, a letter from her on Tuesday and then saying that they found a new investigator and they were teaching her lessons. And then within a few weeks, they would have a baptism date. And I mean, this person, you know, had no restoration heritage at all or knowledge, probably hadn't read the Book of Mormon, where I've read it probably 5 or 6 times. Josh has read it a lot more, but I didn't have to relearn a whole lot of history. And again, history in the LDS churches was used to,
it's a heritage, it's not a history. So they're speaking things that are like the best foot forward and not necessarily factually true all the time. So.
Yeah. But I mean, just, you know, the story is what is used as gospel. And so, I don't know, I felt like it was a little hypocritical because we had had a lifetime of restoration stuff behind us, and then we had been going for 6 months. And so that's kind of unheard of if you have, you know, a 6-month investigator, if you're missionaries, you know, that just doesn't happen. It's usually within a transfer, which is 6 weeks, that you try to meet somebody and baptize them. And right. So I was a little bit annoyed. I'll even say I was straight up annoyed that we had people who were really cautioning us to take things slow. And I understand that. And I think that you should take things slow. But again, I felt like Community of Christ was a broad enough community that we could still grow and change while being in the community, while still being accepted. And I mean, we have atheists that attend in Salt Lake, you know? So right. I felt like there was a really broad range of belief that we could fit in and still fit into the community. So I really didn't feel like the decision was overly rushed.
No, I don't think so either. I mean, with my faith transition in total, that would be over 3 years plus my time attending Community of Christ and really looking into things. So yeah, definitely not a we attended 3 times and don't come in the water type situation at all.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were baptized in January. I do want to talk about a few things that would probably help people that come from the Community of Christ side understand a bit more of things that might be triggering or harder for somebody coming in through the doors that are not used to that experience. And it might be different for each person. I can only speak for myself as far as like what was slightly more uncomfortable. Of all the things that I love, I just do want to mention a few things that were slightly more uncomfortable because definitely for seekers that come from a Latter-day Saint background, we're coming from a situation where religiously there's almost nothing liturgical about the meeting on Sunday. Very little is ritualistic about it other than the sacrament, which we would call communion in Community of Christ, and the prayers, maybe hymn singing. So some of the things for me that was a little bit just slightly more uncomfortable was holding hands in a circle to like say a prayer. I'd just get up and act like things were normal while inside. I was thinking to myself that it was more uncomfortable. Don't have experience with candles. I'm not saying I had an issue with candles whatsoever. That's just different. What else would be different that would be a little bit more uncomfortable? Oh, asking for money in service. So yeah, LDS, they don't do that. It's all kind of like, I don't know if it's secretive is the right word, but you just go hand the envelope to one of the people in the bishopric, which would be called a pastorate in the Community of Christ. And yeah, so, and I get why we have to ask for funds continually, openly, when it's not a commandment to go to heaven. We need funds to run a church, and I understand that perspective of it, but just the outright disciples' generous response was a bit more uncomfortable for me at first.
Well, and I think, I mean, I just want to mention that, I mean, when we say uncomfortable, it's not that I think that it should be changed or anything, but I think that it's good if seekers know what they're going to get into. Like, a lot of times seekers are curious, and so they'll ask these kind of questions on the seekers page on Facebook. And also, yeah, I don't know, there's a lot of words that
don't mean the same thing at all, but they'll be triggering to somebody that comes from the same background.
Well, I mean, so the word endowment, and that's a common word to use, you know, in relation to, you know, a pool of money. And I freaked out. I don't remember where I saw it I was on the Community Price website, and I saw it, and it said something about temple endowment. And in my head, I knew that it was not the same thing, but I remember immediately texting Robin in that moment, and I was like, you've got to talk to me about this word endowment, because I'm not a fan. And she had to kind of, you know, talk me down and say, okay, this is what we mean, you know, we're not talking about anything ritualistic in the temple. And so, yeah, sometimes words will just pop up and will mean different things. Or, I mean, even something like obedience. Obedience means two very different things in the churches. I mean, covenant. There's just words that are that when you're speaking from an LDS background, they come very loaded, I guess. And there's a really deep implied meaning.
Like, to this day, I guess we're still seeing things through a Mormon lens. I mean, that's our whole life growing up. So just recently, we're going to go to World Conference a week and a half from now. No, next week. That's when we'll be driving, is next Wednesday from when we're recording this. Yeah. So yeah, Sean Langdon was inviting us to a bunch of young adult events that are going to be held at World Conference. And I saw those young adult events. I'm like, what is he thinking? I'm not single. I'm not single. I'm not in my 20s anymore. And, yeah, Brittany, I guess, had the exact same reaction, and she had to ask. Who did you ask about that?
I asked Robin about it.
Asked Robin about that, and she's like, no. It's 18 through 35-ish. Just anybody that would be considered a young adult.
Yeah, it doesn't matter your marital status or if you have kids or not. But if you say young adult to a Mormon, it's a very, very specific thing with a very specific purpose of why you're having young adults.
Right, yeah, it's to find somebody to date, I would say. So yeah, even to this day, we're still working through like different meanings. Yeah, so through 2015, we were extended priesthood calls that came to both of us on the same day. I think I got kind of more of a, I don't know if spiritual, but I would say spiritual heads up with that, because I was working my last night, and when I was driving home from work at 6 o'clock in the morning, I just had this really good feeling. And then when I woke up, we had house church later that day, and Robin and Seth were there, and they wanted to stay later to talk to us for a moment. And that's when they both cornered us by ourselves. So I don't know, coming from an LDS background where I already had that expectation of priesthood, it's definitely easier for me to process. And having felt happy coming home, it was just something that was, for me, I would say it was pretty easy when it came. I wouldn't say it would be easy for everybody, because I was called to be a priest. And so coming from an LDS background, that could be a hang up, since all guys over 18 are usually called to be elder or something beyond elder, which would be 70 or high council or high priest, etc. So yeah, I think I was okay with being a priest. So you want to talk about your experience at all?
Yeah. Have I talked about it on Project Sign before? I don't know if
being called to priesthood? No.
Maybe. Have I? I feel like I have.
But I think you should talk about it more than me, because priesthood is very, very different in Community of Christ from coming from an LDS background, because priesthood is the gateway to salvation in the LDS church. And you have to go through the one true church's priesthood as restored through Joseph Smith from angels.
Yeah.
To receive salvation and exaltation. And that's not what priesthood is in Community of Christ. It's an extra responsibility, a sacred responsibility to serve the community that you're in. But it doesn't give you like something to tote above other people's heads. If anything, it's the opposite. You're the servant of all, just like Jesus Christ. It's kind of upside down kingdom vision of that Jesus had. You know, if you're And if you call it the priesthood, you're the one that's serving other people. So for me, though, it wasn't so hard for me just because of my experience coming from an LDS of already being expected to give up my service. So,
well, for me, if I'm being completely honest, I did have a sense of call. I had a few particular moments where I knew that it would eventually come, but I didn't know what it would look like and I didn't know when it would happen. But in my mind, I think somewhere along the lines, I had heard somebody say that, you know, they like people to be members for at least a year before a call is given or presented. And so for some reason maybe I made that up, but in my mind, I had this idea of like, well, I've got at least a year, but I'm still a hot mess. So it'll probably be at least 5 or 6 years. and so I also, a lot of people assumed that I left the LDS church because I wanted to be ordained. And that's been verbalized by people very near and dear to me.
Right.
And so I felt a lot of shame around priesthood.
Because in a way you would be proving them right.
Yeah. And so when the call was presented, well, so I guess I should say I didn't put much thought into it at all. And so when I was a Mormon woman, I didn't pay attention to what the offices could and couldn't do. 16-year-old boys are automatically ordained a priest pretty much no matter what. 18-year-old boys are automatically ordained an elder. And so I just had no reason to really pay attention to what they were doing or those kind of things. And so when the call was presented, I kind of freaked out. It was also came at the end of what I would say a hard summer. Two of our main families spent the summer in Nauvoo. And we had a lot of visitors that summer. And so just our infrastructure was very thin. And so the same people were teaching and speaking and doing all sorts of things in worship and doing potlucks. And we hosted a Sunstone event, which had a colossal amount of people. And it was a big stress on me because I often have 3 kids by myself at church. And when I'm really plugged into the congregation, it's just stressful to be a mom of 3 young kids and trying to look like you know what you're doing. And so I, at that time, had decided, you know, Brittany, you need to take a step back. You're swimming with water, you know, with your head underwater. And I had kind of thought, okay, I need a way to tell the pastorate that I need to take a step back. And I knew they had asked if they could come over and stay longer after house church.
What time frame was this in 2015? Do you remember when that came?
The call came in August.
Okay.
So like Sunstone was in July.
Yeah.
So it literally was at the end of a very complicated summer, just hectic. And so in my mind, I thought, okay, they're going to come and they're going to talk about, you know, helping with women's retreat or something. I thought it was going to be a much, much smaller scale than a priesthood call. And so I was thinking, okay, this is your chance, Britt. Like, you're going to tell them, I want to take a step back. I want to take a break. Like, I just need to sit in the pews and do nothing. And then all of a sudden it was like, priesthood call. It's kind of funny. I just get really awkward when I'm uncomfortable. And I remember I like spilled my drink or something on my lap. I don't even remember. And if Robin and Seth are listening, they might be laughing right now. But I literally just ran upstairs and changed into pajamas because I was like, I just spilled liquid all over me. And what the heck just happened? And I don't want to be around people right now. So I just like ran upstairs and I thought, no, Brittany, you can't, like, there's nowhere you can go. You have to go back downstairs.
I was trying to gauge where you were at with things.
Yeah. I was panicky. Like my palms were sweaty and my heart was racing. And I thought, I felt a lot of shame and inadequacy. And I also felt selfish because I knew the significance of ordaining women in Community of Christ. And so I felt selfish, I guess, for struggling with it because look at this journey that the church has taken. Look at what everybody sacrificed. Look at what everybody worked so hard for. And here I was. I almost felt like I was spitting on it in a way because I was nervous and scared about it. And so I didn't say yes. I think Josh said yes immediately, but he... I mean,
just this laughter, just because I'm like, oh, I'll think about it. No, I'm good. I can say yes. I guess historically that's way out of norm for Community of Christ to just say yes on the spot, I guess.
Well, I think some people do. I just, right. Yeah, I don't know. I just think that everybody's call is different, and I had this idea of what it was going to look like, and it was not what I thought at all, and so... I just said, I need more time, and my voice is probably all wobbly, and yeah, I was a hot mess, but so that happened on a Saturday, and there were 5 calls presented that weekend in the congregation, and so obviously we all talked to each other, and...
Right, yeah, so I think I would have had some more reservations had I known 3 other people in the congregation received calls right at the same time.
But I mean, I understand why it happened. I mean, logistically right. speaking, it needed to happen. When you have a congregation that all of a sudden explodes with people, you need that infrastructure. And we needed it. Like I said, the summer before, it would have been super handy to have more priesthood. So when I realized that I was literally the only one that was like in panic mode, I felt a little silly. But then, like I said on an episode a little while ago with Darren Goble, I learned that it was normal in Community of Christ to kind of freak out a little bit. And I think that Seth and Robin had affirmed that, and they let me know that what I was experiencing was normal, but I don't think I really internalized it. And I thought, no, you're just trying to make me feel better. But in talking to other people, I think I did realize that. But I knew that I was going to say yes, and I think I told them that when they were at my house. I knew it was going to be a yes, but I needed it to be a yes, like a bold yes with some sense of confidence. I needed to have my own confirmation. I needed to just really know that it was the right time, that it just was right. And so Women's Retreat was... about a week later, and I ended up having a pretty sacred experience that I just had this overwhelming confirmation that it was right. And it kind of connected to another experience. I don't know. And not that like I don't want to talk about it, but also I don't know who's going to listen to this. So we're just going to say, if you want to hear more about that, come talk to me. No, but it was sacred and it was special. And so yeah, I was able to give my yes to Robin at Women's Retreat, and it was a good moment. So I think all in all, I'm really glad that I had my spiritual temper tantrum, as I call it. But I still feel silly about it. And there still is a sense of shame. So we weren't ordained for months and months later. We had to take all the classes, of course. But then just scheduling issues, I wasn't ordained until early April. So there was a pretty good amount of time. And I don't know, maybe that's normal.
Right. So that was just to make sure that the people that you wanted there were there. I was the first of the 5 to be ordained in February 14th. Yeah.
And that was scheduling issues too. So.
Right. Yeah, so we, just to let people know, when you get a call to priesthood, it's not automatic. It's not everybody will receive one, but if you do receive one, there are classes that you'll be taking. So we had like an online course that we had to take, and
for the office of priest,
right? So for the office of priest, every week we had this online course where we had an assignment that was due, things to reflect on. I think that's a newer course too, right? The online portion of it.
I think when we did it, we were like the pilot. Maybe there was one other cohort that did it before us, but yeah, it's new.
Right, so I want to say the material of it was something that you have done over some sort of like workshop or something, but yeah, just in general, priesthood is something that requires some preparation for in Community of Christ, and things to reflect on. It's not like, to quote Mark from our congregation, well, looks like somebody just got a driver's license here today, so we'll be ordaining him to a priest now.
Yeah,
there's definitely preparation that's involved on that aspect. And so we had had Sunstone. That call was given after Sunstone, but Sunstone is when I got roped into doing this project, Project Zion podcast. That came from Robin, by the way. So, yeah, we were talking, Katie, Seth, Robin, and I, all at Sunstone, about when we wanted to get this thing launched off the ground. And this project was like a year and a half in the making before it ever got started. So, yeah, we decided September 1st, the first Tuesday of September, we're going to get this thing rolling, and we've been pretty consistent with it since then. How did you get wrapped into this?
Well, I think I was asked to give topic ideas, and I think how it happened is that I wanted to do the episode with Andrew Bolton and Barb Walden about the story that they had told, or Barb had told at reunion that year. And so it's the Jesus, Jesus or Joseph episode, I think is what it's called.
Right.
And so I suggested that, and I do think it's a really good story still, but I was the only one that had real enthusiasm, I guess, for it, because I was the one that was in the conversation. I think that, I don't know if anybody else on the Project Zion team was really at reunion at that moment when the story was told. And so I was like, oh, Brittany, well, you can just interview them. And here I am.
No, we all thought it was a cool story. We just didn't think of putting it together as a podcast. I don't know why we didn't jump on that one. But yeah, so Robin, again, got Brittany involved. Like, yeah, so we can set up an interview to have you start talking to him. And so here's Brittany. Yeah, so we started Project Zion. And then Salt Lake had the unique opportunity of hosting the Parliament of the World's Religions. And that came in October. And that was a really unique experience, because Parliament of the World's Religions is an event that Community of Christ leaders in general have liked to attend. Community of Christ in general is just more ecumenical of getting out there and rubbing shoulders with people of other faiths. So that was a really unique event, because Steve Easy, the president of Community of Christ, along with a lot of other people, was able to make their way out to Salt Lake in October. And so that was when I was able to interview Steve Easy, as well as who else came out for that? A lot of people did.
Well, I interviewed Barb Carter and Michelle McGrath.
Right.
And the Luffmans came out, and Steve Shields. And that was a time where we were able to spend with Terry Reed, which is really special.
Right.
Yeah, there were, I mean, I don't want to just name people because I'll forget people, but there was a large number of Community of Christ people. And I really liked it, because I felt like it gave me a glimpse into the larger church. You know, it wasn't just my own little congregation. It was the first time, I guess, yeah, maybe the first time that there were people from World Church, new people from World Church, that were representing different greater geographical areas. And so it was interesting, because there was a ton at Parliament, and I was a little overwhelmed at how much stuff there was. And so, I mean, I would find little sessions that I would want to go to, but I just really felt myself drawn to sticking in the booth. I wanted to talk to our people. And I think I've said that several times.
Right,
and
yeah.
I think maybe sometimes I frustrated some people, because they were, you know, different people that were there were wanting me to go to various things. I'm like, that's like a C+ on my interest scale, but I could sit here and talk to Judy Luffman. So I'm going to do that instead.
Yeah.
So it was good. I really, really enjoyed having people out. And all of these experiences, I guess, over the last couple of years have just kind of confirmed that decision when we joined. Yeah. Right.
It's just like one big family, and it's just a camaraderie of identity.
Yeah.
I just love you there and love them back, you know?
Yeah. I haven't felt any regret as deeply as I felt the loss of losing my LDS community. And still, I mean, we live in a very, very LDS neighborhood and county and state. And so there still is that constant reminder of that loss of community. But I think overall it's worth it. I mean, it's cliche, but I think that it is worth it to, live authentically and follow your heart. And I just think of all the things that I've been able to do as a woman in Community of Christ that would not be possible if I were LDS. I mean, even beyond ordination.
Right.
So.
Yeah, there's so many things beyond ordination that you have been able to do. Yeah. And that any person can just do. But having been ordained, I was ordained, like we mentioned, I was ordained in February and Brittany was in April. How cool it is, coming from an LDS background, to bless and pass communion with my wife.
Yeah.
It's so cool. Pretty if cool. You're, I don't know, that like right there alone is worth it.
Yeah.
Very cool. So it's really natural too. Like there's nothing
out of it. Yeah. I was really surprised at how natural it was. So we bless and pass communion moments after I was ordained. I mean, I was ordained and then we had communion immediately following. And I sometimes kind of get into pilot mode, like autopilot, where I just kind of like, I don't know, everybody knows what autopilot is and I'm a pro at it. And I thought that that's the mode that I was going to go into, kind of like this half denial, don't think too hard about it. Just don't really pay attention to what's happening, just kind of like get it over with, and then you can process it afterwards. And I found myself not doing that. I mean, I was very much aware of what was going on, very in the moment, and I was alarmed at how normal it felt. And then it just kind of, I guess, stirred up more, like, this is right. Like, this is right. In this moment, right now, churches, all churches, should be enjoying what's happening in this moment. And it was, for me, it was a really special day. I ended up having my brother and sister-in-law come, which I was unexpected, but right. It was really meaningful. And then my best friend's mom came. She was my first grade teacher, and I've known her forever. And that was also unexpected. And so I had very meaningful people there in that moment with me, and they were supportive of it, and it was, I don't know, I guess I hope that they.
And so at first you were like scared and didn't want to pass.
Oh yeah, no, I was
their side where they were sitting, and I'm like, well, you're going to regret it if you don't do it, so I think you should do it.
Well, yeah,
because they were there for you, you know.
Yeah, well, and I didn't know that they were coming. I didn't know that any of them were coming, and that they didn't know that each other were coming either. And so we were all surprised, and they sat together because they know each other. And so I was in pure panic mode. I think we had our kids in between us, and I was like, Josh, you've got to be the one to serve this side. Like, if they don't take communion, or like, what if, like, I can't deal with that. Like, I don't know. I feel too awkward. And again, all that shame just kind of washed over me. And this was literally minutes before it happened. But yeah, I ended up doing it at the last minute. Josh is like, no, you're doing this side.
So, I didn't force her to.
No,
I do it however she wanted to, but I just,
you know. Yeah, yeah. I mean, you told me that I would regret it, and I mean, you were right. So, yeah, it ended up being a really, really positive experience.
Right. So. And so, yeah, we've also blessed communion at House Church in Provo since then.
Yeah.
But yeah, things are going pretty well.
I've done a couple baptisms.
Right, and I've missed those. That's been really hard for me. I've been with my weird work schedule. But yeah, I miss those due to my work schedule. That's kind of bummed me out that I can't be there to see Brittany baptizing people that congregants have come to her specifically asking for that.
Well, I don't know. I think it's cool because, I mean, you get to walk with these people on their journey, and they're helping you just as much as you're helping them. And you get to come and stand in this place, not in a place of authority, not in a place of an office or of, you know, I don't think that there's anything more special about me than somebody who isn't ordained or who's ordained to a different office or whatever. It's not about that. It's about being a symbol of the journey and being a symbol of the community and the covenant that's about to happen. And so for me, whether it's been communion or a baptism, they've both been very, very much in a sense of me wearing white on my baptism day and having to reclaim that color. It's kind of reclaimed ritual for me. And it's allowed me to see things from a new light. One thing that I don't know if I've mentioned is for me, communion or the sacrament in the LDS church, it had become such a standard run-of-the-mills, go-through-the-motion thing that it really had lost pretty much all meaning. And I knew that it was meaningful, and I knew that being served communion from a woman, I mean, I'd had several women serve me communion before my ordination, and those have always been very special moments, but still the sacrament itself, I hadn't like reframed fully. And so it still kind of just felt like, oh, communion Sunday, like this is what we do. And so I read a lot. I ended up reading Searching for Sunday by Rachel Held Evans. And she kind of goes through the sacraments of, I think she just goes through just the standard Catholic sacraments. And so communion's one of them. And just reading that chapter and reading through some of her footnotes and things like that, it completely transformed it for me, which was really good. Nadia Boltz-Weber also, her discussions about communion kind of changed it for me too. And it went from being this, you know, stagnant, almost dead tradition to something that had a lot of meaning. And I think that having a communion that's not tied to personal worthiness, once I really nailed that down.
I mean, but in a way it kind of is, though, that everybody's welcome to the table. And like, well, the dinner table of how, that symbology. You know?
Yeah.
And just even using that word communion, like you're in communion with God and the people around you, you know?
Yeah. But I mean, I had seen it as like, oh, I was good this week, so I didn't mess up this week. I didn't have to talk to my bishop this week, so I get to take communion, you know? So that's what I mean when I say worthy. I mean, it's something that you're either worthy of taking or you're not,
right?
In the LDS church. And so it almost felt divisive, and, you know, there was a group of people that weren't worthy to take it. And so it just always felt uncomfortable. And so for me, reclaiming and regaining that relationship with communion has been really good. And so in serving communion, I wanted to make sure that I was on good terms with that before I just got up there and did it if it was meaningless to me. Like, I didn't want that. And so I had to deconstruct things that I didn't expect that I would have to deconstruct. I guess that's
what you're trying to
the
say.
Short answer.
So, coming up to pretty much present after April of Brittany being ordained and where we're at now, coming into June, we're really excited. This episode's going to air on the Tuesday when World Conference is officially kicked off. So we're just really excited to come and meet all the people there.
We have really exciting interviews coming up.
Right, so hold on
really
to your hats.
Really exciting interviews coming up.
I think we should mention them right here.
Should we? No. Yeah. No. We're not going to mention them right here.
We're not going to mention them right here.
It'll be a surprise.
Yeah. We have some interesting interviews from some very special people coming up. And yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm going to try to do like short little interviews with people and just splice them together. Meet the people of Community of Christ at World Conference.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
And that'll be an episode coming up as well. Do you want to talk about going into the future and what you're going to be doing this next semester?
So this fall, I am going to be attending Community Christ Seminary through Graceland, and I'm really excited. I feel like I have deconstructed a lot, and I have tried to reconstruct a lot on topics that have come up, but I know that seminary is challenging, and I've had people warn me that, you know, there's a lot of deconstruction that continues to happen and things like that. And that's what I want. And I want to work with seekers, and I want to have a grounding in the identity of Community of Christ. I mean, there's a lot of different divinity schools that I could go to, but I think that going to Community of Christ Seminary is what I need to really, yeah, just be grounded in the identity of the church. And I feel like I work with seekers a lot, just in our congregation and online. And sometimes I feel like I'm presenting the church from an ex-Mormon perspective. And I still kind of catch myself saying, you know, things like, well, they believe or they do this. And I've claimed it as my own, but I'm really looking forward to being able to stand in the church and have my perspective be one that is Community of Christ first and not have this like underlining ex-Mormon vibe to it. I guess that's my hope with going to Community of Christ Seminary. Yeah. And just learning about the greater Christian movement and more about scripture. That's one thing that I have found that I am not strong in. For as much as the scripture study was stressed when I was a little kid, I find myself really not knowing the scriptures.
I don't know if you can unless you know the context. Like, I think you can get good messages out of it from any background.
Yeah.
But it definitely is misused when you don't know the context.
Well, for sure. But sometimes, I mean, there's just even stories that, I'm not very scripturally literate, which is why I'm excited for seminary and why it might be a challenge at points. Because I feel like I have so much catching up to do.
Well, yeah, thanks, Brittany. We all are here to support you. And
that's good, because you're the father of my children. So you're going to be picking up some slack.
I'll be watching the kids, depending when you have to go back to... Yeah, so that's part of it. She'll be going a week each semester back to Missouri.
I think one reason why it's important for me is that I want to be an example to my kids that this is normal. Like, I love that they see me doing things. Like, I don't know. I struggle because I don't like other people seeing me do things. Like, the last baptism that I did when we got in the font, I kind of freaked out. I was like, oh my gosh, what if I have a panic attack right here, right now? Because I just looked out and there was all these people there not looking at me. They were there to support the person I was baptizing. But I just felt like the spotlight was just on where I was at. It just stressed me out. But earlier that morning, my daughter just said, hey, Mom, you're baptizing so-and-so today, aren't you? And I was like, yep. And she's like, cool. And it was just totally normal. And it was cool, you know? So I'm excited to do something like seminary because it's going to be normal for my kids. And it's going to be just what their mom does. You know, she goes to school for church and she does her best to work with people that are coming out of a faith community that isn't working for them and offering another solution. It's not even an option. Like, it's not an option to pursue ministry, certainly not paid ministry, which is not what I'm going for, but ministry in general. I mean, ministry, like, feeling a call to ministry was not a thing when I was growing up. And so for me to be pursuing that and to say, no, I actually want to be part of this bridge between these two communities is kind of, it's a bold and scary step, I think.
And it'll just be normal for our kids. They won't be afraid of anything that they're going to learn at school. And
yeah,
know this is a taboo topic that I need to put my guard up if I go into a class. I think, well, that's a pretty good spot to wrap up. I just want to thank you all for listening and just keep excited for the people that we haven't mentioned that are coming up.
Thanks, everybody.
Project Zion is sponsored by the Latter-day Seekers team from Community of Christ.
The views expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official views of the Latter-day Seekers team or of Community of Christ.
Yeah. Let's talk about polygamy. Just kidding, I wanted to edit something else out.
Oh, gosh.
Okay.
This should all just be edited out, because it's really awkward sounding. You can put that as a blooper at the end. It should all be edited out.
It should all be edited out.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, thanks for bringing...